we're back here downtown on a Monday afternoon, going from Broadway to metal, as only we can do. Our next guest has played with Quiet Riot, Queensryche, Ozzy Osbourne, Whitesnake, these days out on tour with the Guess Who, one of the best bassists in the business. Now, the backstory of this conversation is that, I don't know, a couple of months ago, I don't even know how we got on this topic, but we were talking with our friend Joe Riccio on his Friday segment, and he said, when you get Rudy Sarzo on the show from Quiet Riot, let me know, and I'll come sit in. So we reached out, and it took a little bit of while, but we heard back from Rudy. He was more than happy to do it, so we let Joe know. And Joe actually drove up from Southern Maine earlier today and joined us for our conversation with Rudy Sarzo. Rudy, thank you so much for making some time for us.
My pleasure. How are you guys doing?
We're doing great. How are you doing? How's the tour going with Guess Who?
It's going fantastic. You know, this is what happens. We usually play on the weekends. So during the week, I am home for a couple of days, and then I go back out again. So I get a lot of frequent flyer miles.
How did it come together? Did they reach out to you?
Well, to make a long story short, I was touring with Sass Jordan, who is a big-time Canadian singer, and I'm a big fan of hers, and we are friends, and her husband happens to be the lead singer in the Guess Who. So when they were looking for a bass player, she said, hey, why don't you call Rudy? And they called me, and I've been in the band ever since.
Well, that's fantastic.
It's about 3 years now. Yeah.
Love it. Well, let's go back in time a little bit to how it all got started. You went to see a Quiet Riot show, if I remember my history correctly. You met Kevin Dubrow after the show. You guys clicked, and then the next thing you know, you're in the band.
You must have read my book.
That might have happened, yes.
There was time in between. I saw Quiet Riot playing at the Starwood, and if I see a band, I've been doing this as long as I can remember. If I see a band that I think they're on the right path, you know, especially a band that is unsigned playing in a club, I always go up to them and let them know, you know, hey, you guys are, I love what you're doing, basically, you know, keep going in that direction. And you guys are going to you have a pretty good chance of making it, basically. And so I did that. And so I left Los Angeles and I went to the East Coast to play with my brother. And as I was getting ready to return to Los Angeles, I got the phone call from Kevin that he tracked me down because they had basically run out of bass players in Los Angeles. So he tracked me down, and I just happened to be going back to Los Angeles within a few days. So I did. I called him as soon as I got back to L.A., went to audition, and got the gig.
Hey, Rudy, this is Joe. How are you?
Hey, Joe, how you doing?
I'm good. So this all happened after Kelly went across town to kill Kevin and got pulled over on the way?
Well, you know what? I wasn't there, so I really don't know the particulars. Yeah. You might have to either interview Kelly about that or read his book.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, it must have been amazing to me to see Randy Rhoads for the first time. That must have blown you away.
Oh, yeah. I mean, and it's... Like, again, you know, one of the reasons when I ran into Kevin at the Starwood after their set, I was so blown away, you know, mainly because, you know, how great they were as a band. They had a concept together. But Randy was ready to be, to leave the club scene and go into the arenas, you know, and record and so on. Even though, you know, the band had already recorded a couple of releases that were only available in Japan. There was just a Japan only, you know, mm-hmm. record deal. So they had some experience already recording.
And you became great friends with Randy. And was it Randy that got you to team up with Ozzy Osbourne in the early 80s?
Yeah.
Yeah, this is after Quiet Riot 2, which is a great album.
Well, you know, Yeah, it was very simple. They went back to Los Angeles to look for a rhythm section, and they got Tommy Aldridge, who they knew, and Tommy and Ozzy already knew each other from touring together. You know, Black Sabbath and Black Oak Arkansas did a lot of touring in the 70s. So it's like, you know, Tommy doesn't need to audition. And this was like my first break. So I went out of like, you know, out of nowhere. Who's this guy? You know, so let's audition him, you know. And it was basically, I had the gig. All I needed to do was to be able to play the songs, you know. And the reason why I say I had the gig is because they were looking for a bass player who was not going to be a bad influence on Ozzy. They needed somebody who was not going to be drinking, doing drugs. And when we're talking about late 70s, early 80s, which yeah. that was pretty much the norm.
Yeah.
You know, that was pretty everybody, you know. But it was just basically keeping the partying to a minimum, basically. And so they were looking for somebody who was going to be trustworthy and that they could rely on. And Randy recommended me, because he kept recommending me because, you know, we had already been in a band together. And I was already, you know, in his mom's school teaching staff. So, you know, he knew that I could be reliable. So that's why he put his own trust, you know, with Ozzy and Sharon, you know, he put that on the line by recommending me.
So was that really one of the big parts of playing with Ozzy, was kind of babysitting, policing Ozzy, everybody kind of making sure he's intact and getting into the show?
I don't even think that even Sharon can police Ozzy.
I wouldn't think so either.
You know, Ozzy will find a way if he wants to party.
You know, I can certainly relate to that. One thing I also heard is that Randy kind of, you know, with Quiet Riot, he sort of was like, okay, well, that band's done. And he brought a lot of the kind of riffs over from those songs, and kind of Ozzy sort of reworked them and kind of wrote his own lyrics. Is that
something? Everybody does that.
Yeah.
Everybody does that. I mean, you know, during the time that I was with Quiet Riot, I mean, we kept working on new songs, new riffs, new everything. We're still making demos. You know, once Quiet Riot was over, you know, the Randy Rose version, he moved on. And these are riffs that he wrote.
Absolutely.
And he was like, okay, you know, I got this and this and that. And they reworked the riff to, you know, to accommodate what became known as the Ozzy Osbourne sound, you know.
Yeah, like when I hear You Drive Me Crazy, I kind of immediately think of, like, You Can't Kill Rock and Roll. And it's like, I kind of listen to them side by side, and I can hear the similarities. It's great.
You know, I will have to hear that side by side, because You Can't Kill Rock and Roll being on the second album was a little bit forward compositionally. Mm-hmm. It was a step forward from what Randy composed on the first record. Mm-hmm. So you know, mixing, you know, modes, minor and major modes and all that, and especially during the verses, and so it was a little bit more sophisticated than harmony wise.
I think one of the most underrated Ozzy songs, also personally.
But it's a very, very well-crafted song, you know, something that was beyond the scope of what the direction of songwriting was in Quiet Riot.
We're talking with Rudy Sarzo here on Downtown. Rudy, what led you to head back to Quiet Riot and getting there in time for their biggest commercial success? Perfect timing on your part.
Yeah.
Well, I knew exactly that Quiet Riot was going to be the first debut band to have a debut number one record, you know, metal. Yeah. No, I mean, you know, you never know. I mean, the only reason why I left Ozzy was because it was very painful to go on without Randy. You know, I had lost the joy that initially was there. You know, one day he's there, the next day is gone, but you're supposed to continue and deliver the same type of high energy show. And the reason, my personal reason why I was there was gone. That was gone. And once it's gone, you start looking for for that joy again, you know, somehow, some way. And I found the joy of, you know, going back and playing with Frankie, who I Frank is one of the oldest. When I say oldest, is, you know, musician that I play with. I've been playing with Frankie Benelli on and off since 1972. You know, and then with Kevin, who I had just, you know, recently at that time, I had already been playing with him. I was playing with Kevin and his band, Dubrow, up until I got the Ozzy gig. So, you know, there was an emotional refuge going back to playing with Frankie and Carlos and Kevin, of course, you know. I knew Carlos from playing in the circuit. He had a band called Snow. And Dubrow and Quiet Riot, we were often play with them on the same bill.
And I see that Frankie is still in the band because they released a live album last year, right?
Yeah, and they're getting ready to release another studio record.
Nice.
Rudy, we were talking about this before we hooked up with you this afternoon. People think of Rudy Sarzo and Quiet Riot comes to mind right away, but it overlooks some great work you did with a lot of other bands, particularly Queensryche.
Yeah, Queensryche. I saw, and in 2013, you hooked up with them. Well, before, I guess they had to change the name to Operation Mindcrime now, I believe.
Yeah, you know what? At the time, there were two versions of the band going around, and out of respect for the other version of the band, I always call it the Jeff Tate version of the band.
Yeah.
And then once in the courts decided who would keep the brand, whether it would be Jeff Tate or the other members, then, and of course, it went to the other members. Then I felt that it was, you know, it was basically time for me to move on. And yeah, I mean, but that was something that I got to play some really great music that was already written by, you know, from a vast catalog of great songs. You know, the Queensryche, yeah. The band Queensryche.
Yeah.
Recorded and composed. I got to play that, and I got to go on tour with my brother, which I had never done that on a national level. I play with my brother local bands, but never, you know, on tour. So that was a lot of fun.
Nice. I'm curious about your time you spent with Whitesnake after Quiet Riot.
Well,
how was the contrast really there?
I was a member of the band. It wasn't really like spending time. It was mm-hmm. like, it was right. more than that. Spending time is kind of like passing through.
Yes.
And even though
yes.
I was there for about 7 years, you know. First tour was 1987, and then the last tour I did was 1994. We did Slip of the Tongue record. So, yeah, it was great. It was wonderful. You know, being on those tours, making the videos, great, great musicians, great friends, great music. It was outstanding.
Your book, Off the Rails, one of the great rock books, looking back at your incredible career, but a big part of that is your friendship. It was Randy Rhoads, maybe the guy you were closest to in the music business?
I would have to say yes, because... he's one of the him, and then I would say Frankie, because I've known Frankie since 1972. Kevin, because I live with him, and Randy was part of that. See, again, going back to Quiet Riot, you know, I was in Quiet Riot with Randy and Kevin and Drew Forsythe, and then after that the Metal Health version of Quiet Riot. And so I, you know, those guys will be my closest friends, because it's different when you're playing with people at a non-global level, just as local musicians. Mm. It's a whole different friendship that you have, because you're all struggling, and nothing brings you closer than the struggle, you know. And with other bands, of course, I got great friendships. I mean, as a matter of fact, guess who? They're some of the greatest guys and musicians I've ever worked with, you know. And I'm in the band. It's not even work. It's pleasure, you know, to make music with them and to be in their company. But there's something special about the struggle that really creates a whole different bond, musical bond.
Let's talk about the work you're doing. I'm fascinated by this, the work you do as a computer digital animator. Can you tell us a bit more about that?
Yeah, that's something that I was really deeply into before I got LASIK. It's coming on 10 years. And what happened was that I was beginning to not see as well as I wanted to or used to, especially on stage. So I really concentrated more on my creative output by getting a laptop in front of me, wearing glasses, and just being creative with a digital animation, you know, computer generated. And once I got the LASIKs, I really dove deeply, more than I've ever had before, into music, because that's what I really am. I am a musician, you know. So it brought back the joy of being able to see what I was playing and reading charts, reading music, and, you know, just everything that's connected with having vision, you know, and playing an instrument.
As you look back now at, more than four decades of making music, do you feel like you're having as much fun? Is it still the same challenge? Is it still the same reward when you step on stage with the Guess Who today as 30, 40 years ago?
Yeah, I have different levels of challenge. I always the challenge of we push each other. All of us in the band, you know, nobody ever phones it in. We have one of the best frontmen I've ever played with, Derek Sharp. And not only is he an outstanding singer, but he really knows how to communicate with the crowd. And he does an incredible job. So, you know, all the guys in the band, they're just unbelievable. Gary Peterson, the original drummer, you know, to play with the drummer who actually recorded all those iconic songs, it's really a blessing. It really is, you know, because you really don't get that opportunity, you know, too often. And so, yeah, it's all good. I am so happy. I am so fulfilled. And I do that by challenging myself at different levels. Like I said, with I guess who I, that's the challenge of making, you know, bringing to the crowds some of the most memorable music songs of their soundtrack of their lives. And the other challenge is challenging myself, learning, always learning something new every day. You know, I go to YouTube, go to my preferred mentors and, you know, music teachers, instructors, and I'm always learning something new.
Well, Rudy, we're so glad that you made time for us today, and even more glad you're out there still making great music. Keep it up. Have fun on the road this summer, and thanks again for visiting with us.
Thank you, Rudy.
Thank you so much. God bless you all.
Yes, Rudy Sarzo, conversation we taped a little bit earlier today. Again, he's out on tour doing the weekend tours with the Guess Who. So good for him. Great guy. Interesting story as well. In the metal side of things, which I profess I don't know a whole lot about, but I just have so much respect for talented musicians, regardless of the genre. This is a guy who's played with everybody
and done it for decades. Yeah. That's the impressive thing to have the longevity in the music world, in the touring music world, is something.
So our thanks to Rudy and thanks to Joe for planting the seed and then coming all the way up from Southern Maine to sit in on the conversation with us. That was fun.